You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning, friends, and welcome to Life Talk. I'm Mary Louise Curry, the Director of the Respect Life Office at the Archdiocese of Chicago. And this morning, we're discussing issues that make a difference in your life. And you know, this is a very important month for life issues because it's hard to imagine, but on January 22nd, our nation will mark the 36th anniversary of the Supreme Court's Roe versus Wade decree. And since that time, it's unfathomable that more than 50 million abortions have been reported as being performed. And that doesn't even include those that go unreported, as some states do not have reporting requirements in certain conditions. And so it's just a tremendous loss of life, a tremendous loss also for the women and men who are involved in those tragic situations and making those decisions. And we really need to pray for the transformation of our country. And so there are many parishes that are hosting activities around the Archdiocese of Chicago to mark the 36th anniversary of Roe versus Wade. We had a major mass with Cardinal George on January 3rd, and we had a huge turnout for that mass, which was a great blessing. That was at Queen of the Rosary Parish. Between January 18th and the 25th, there are going to be vigils for life, educational seminars, and all sorts of other great activities happening around the Archdiocese. If your parish is doing some kind of activity, please let us know. You can call the Respect Life Office at 312-534-5355. Again, that's 312-534-5355. And then we'll put it in the press release with all of the other activities that are happening around the Archdiocese as we raise in prayer all of those who are involved in this tragedy and ask God to remove this scourge from our land. This has just caused tremendous sadness, heartbreak, and suffering for so many people, as well as the unfathomable loss of life. And there's also the March for Life marking that event. There's going to be one in Washington, D.C., of course, which we're bringing five buses to from the Archdiocese, but also there will be a Chicago March for Life that will take place on January 18th, and people will gather at Holy Name Cathedral at 1:30 p.m. on the steps, and then they will walk to Michigan Avenue. So the Chicago March for Life is on Sunday, January 18th at 1:30 p.m. And lots of other activities going on. But today we want to talk about a very important document. Oh, before I get into that, actually, also I should mention the Speak Out Illinois event, which will be happening on January 31st, Saturday, January 31st, at the Westin in Lombard. And it will feature Father Tom Eitenauer, who is the president of Human Life International, Phyllis Schlafly, and Dr. Alveda King, the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And this event is sponsored by more than 30 pro-life organizations throughout Illinois, of which the Respect Life Office is one. So I encourage you for more information to go to www.speakoutillinois.org. And I'm very excited because we have a fantastic guest with us today, and we're going to be talking about a very important new development, and that is the document Dignitatis Personae, which was issued by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith at the Vatican on the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe, December 12th. So this is still a very recent document, and people are just starting to learn about it and get the word out. And to help us discuss this document and really learn in particular how to implement this in our lives is Monsignor Robert Dempsey. He is a priest of the Archdiocese of Chicago. He was for 10 years the editor of the Vatican newspaper L'Osservatore Romano in English. He's a member of the Presbyteral Council and the College of Consultors here in the Archdiocese, and he's on the Archdiocesan Bioethics Commission. Monsignor Dempsey, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you, Mary Louise. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, it's a great blessing to have you here with us. This is wonderful. And later in the program, we may be joined by Father Tad Paholchik of the National Catholic Bioethics Center. We'll keep you posted on that. But Monsignor Dempsey, could you just maybe do kind of for the layperson here, give us a little overview of the document Dignitatis Personae?
Well, it's what's called an instruction. That is, it's a set of moral teachings and guidelines relating to questions primarily concerning human reproduction, procreation. Back in the 1980s, in the mid-80s, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith issued a similar instruction called Donum Vitae, the gift of life, and it was issued at a time where things such as human cloning and embryonic stem cell research seemed to be just off in the distance as just possibilities, but not quite sure what would happen. But 20-some years later, now so many things have changed, that this document is intended sort of as an update and application of the same basic principles and ideas, but that some more in detail the questions that have arisen in the last 20-some years.
That's great. That's great. And why is the document called Dignitatis Personae?
Well, it's called that. the custom since the Middle Ages with these documents that are issued formally in Latin is to use the first two letters of the first sentence as a sort of shorthand way of referring to them. So, for instance, the Constitution on the Church of Vatican II begins with the words, Christ is the light of the nations, which in Latin is Lumen Gentium, so the document is referred to as Lumen Gentium. This instruction's very first sentence begins with the phrase, the dignity of the human person. And in fact, I read the sentence to you, the dignity of a person must be recognized in every human being from conception to natural death. So in the Latin text, the first two words are dignitas personae. But that sort of sets the tone, the leitmotif of the whole document, because that very first sentence says everything, gives a fundamental moral principle on which everything else is going to be based, and that is personal dignity. The dignity of a human person must be recognized, acknowledged, and respected in every human being from the moment of conception until natural death. And so everything else that is said in the document will be kind of an elaboration or application of that fundamental point of departure.
That's so helpful, Monsignor Dempsey, because I think that a lot of people feel like, oh gosh, this document is named in Latin. This sounds very intimidating. But in fact, to understand that context, I think makes such a tremendous difference. We're talking with Monsignor Robert Dempsey, who is a priest of the Archdiocese of Chicago and was the editor of L'Osservatore Romano for 10 years and is a bioethicist on the Bioethics Commission and other major councils here in the Archdiocese. We welcome your questions and comments at 312-255-8408. Again, that's 312-255-8408. And we're discussing the document Dignitatis Personae, which was issued by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith on December 12th. So then there is, Monsignor Dempsey, there is kind of a historical context, it sounds like, for this document. These concepts that the document puts forth then are not brand new, it sounds like.
Well, the basic principle, of course, is fundamental to all morality. And in fact, the document refers several times to the Hippocratic Oath, the oath that doctors have taken for generations and generations, whose first maxim, primum non nocere, the first thing you must do is to cause no harm. The document is based on principles of natural ethics, natural law, which would be part of human nature from the beginning, plus enhanced and further understood and appreciated in the light of Revelation. Particularly, the document makes reference to the feast, the mystery we celebrate at Christmas time, the Incarnation, in which the already basic natural dignity of every human being was further enhanced and increased to an extraordinary degree when the Son of God became man, became part of took a human nature into himself, sort of shared our lot, lived among us, and conferred inestimable dignity on human existence. So the basic principles on which everything is based is part of human nature, the way God made us, as revealed by Christ, and then further enhanced with the gifts of his supernatural life.
Yes, you know, I think that sometimes we forget the enormity of the incarnation and the dignity that it has bestowed on each of us as human beings and all of our brothers and sisters in the continuum of life from conception and natural death. We need to head to a break. We're talking with Monsignor Robert Dempsey about the new document, Dignitatis Personae, and what this document specifically means for us as people of faith in our lives. And when we come back, we're going to be talking more about some of the specific applications of this document. So stay with us. We've got a lot of interesting topics to come here about reproductive technologies, about contraception, and all sorts of other exciting issues. So stay with us. We'll be right back here on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son isn't a number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
Are you an active volunteer in your parish? Do you want to grow spiritually and deepen your faith and prayer life? Do you want to know more about the Bible, church doctrine and history, and about sacraments and liturgy? The Archdiocese of Chicago offers the Called and Gifted program for generous people like you. Through weekly classes and monthly formation days, Called and Gifted helps parish volunteers become more effective parish ministers. You'll study at a site near you, forming friendships and deepening your faith. And each month, you'll attend a formation day of prayer and learning at a retreat center of stunning beauty. Over 1,500 volunteer ministers have found greater confidence for ministry through the Called and Gifted program. For more information about this wonderful opportunity for growth, call Sister Peg at 847-837-4555 or email layministry@usml.edu. Don't put it off. Call today.
Welcome back to Life Talk here on the Catholic Community of Faith. I'm Mary Louise Curry, the Director of the Respect Life Office at the Archdiocese of Chicago, and we welcome your questions and comments as we're discussing the new document, Dignitatis Personae, with Monsignor Robert Dempsey. Our number is 312-255-8408. Again, that's 312-255-8408. So give us a call. Monsignor Dempsey, we were discussing this important document, and you know, a lot of times people don't understand. You know, they think, oh, a document, that sounds kind of boring. But in fact, this document has a lot of practical application to our lives and reveals Christ's truth about some of these very important bioethical issues.
Yes, indeed, it does. In fact, all of the questions that it deals with, questions of, for instance, in vitro fertilization, embryonic stem cell research, human cloning, and several other issues as well. These are all things that are going on a regular basis, and in fact, are the subject of a great deal of scientific endeavor, and have, in the case, for instance, of in vitro fertilization, they're huge multi-million-dollar industries in this
yes.
country dedicated precisely to that kind of work. So we're not talking about merely abstract questions, but things that are part of life, very much going on as we speak.
Yes, absolutely. We are, Monsignor Dempsey, we are joined now by Father Tad, actually. Father Tad Boholczyk, we have managed to locate him on his national travels here. And for those who aren't familiar with Father Tad Boholczyk, he has his PhD in neuroscience from Yale. He did his postdoctoral work at Massachusetts General Hospital. He's internationally renowned as a bioethicist, and he's a priest of the Diocese of Fall River and the director of education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Father Tad, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you, Mary Louise and Monsignor.
Good morning, Father.
Wonderful to have you with us.
Thank you.
So, Father Tad, we are talking about, kind of the background of this document, Dignitatis Personae, the historical kind of context, the foundation of the teachings of the dignity of the human person. And we are just getting into, actually, the manner in which the document addresses assisting couples who have infertility. And Chicago is just known as a hub, to be quite honest, for in vitro fertilization. In fact, Chicago Magazine had contacted me, I think it was in August, about doing about an article on this and what the church's perspective was. And then the article was bumped because Barack Obama was elected president, and that that bumped the article. But it was a great opportunity at least to share with the reporter, the beauty of the church's teachings. But in a nutshell, Father Tad, could you share what the document states, and then maybe we can get into some of the individual issues such as IVF or ICSI or other techniques.
Yeah, the document is certainly stressing the importance of bringing new life into the world always within the context of marital intimacy. It recognizes and stresses that there will always be a violation against human dignity which occurs if we choose to create human life in other ways, if we choose to advert to petri dishes and test tubes as a way to engender new human members of the family, of the human family, that this always involves us not just in bringing harm to those individuals who we bring into the world that way, but it also represents a violation of the gift of our own sexuality, so that couples who choose to do this are in an important way violating the meaning of their own bodies as they go down this path and turn this into a kind of a purely technological progress that has become divorced from the inner meaning of marital intimacy and the way that their love is expressed to each other in their body-to-body self-giving.
Hmm. I think that a lot of times in our society, we think of sex as something to do, something that's just pragmatic. We don't think of it as, God's beautiful vision for this gift, and that it is a reflection of God's love, actually, in that male-female complementarity.
I think that's right. And so often people think of it even in terms of mere recreation. In other words, as we have gone further and further down that path and separated the meanings of sexuality from each other and allowed it to become something that is not procreative in its orientation, in our understanding of it, then it becomes possible to, once you have separated that procreative aspect away from sex, then the question becomes, well, why can't we choose procreation on its own? And it's really not procreation anymore. Now it becomes manufacture. So it becomes a separate enterprise.
Yes. So. Yes. Now, Monsignor Dempsey, I want you to just feel free to jump in here to
Would just add that, we're dealing now with in vitro fertilization, the flip side, if you will, the opposite side of the coin that began with artificial contraception. With artificial contraception, we established the practice that sex need not have anything to do with procreation, with the bringing about new human life. What we have with the artificial methods like in vitro fertilization is that procreation need have nothing to do with love or marriage or family life. As Donum Vitae originally said, and Father Tad made reference to, we turn the procreation of a human being into a production, a manufacturing process. And what began with infertile couples trying very, very hard to have a child and not being able to, now we have this procedure where, you know, anonymous people donate their egg cells and their sperm, and they're created in dishes and then given to a surrogate mother. And the whole process now is just an elaborate scientific production line that has little or nothing to do with love or family life.
Yes.
So you have a, you know, it's the sort of the flip side of the same problem. Now we have the procreation that is completely divorced from marital life and family life.
Yes, yes.
And it's, you know, and we, you know, we see that particularly with some of our celebrities, you know, where they talk yes. about they have no intention of marrying, and yet they go through all kinds of hoops to have children.
Oh, celebrities, or even just people, you know, in the pews, Catholics in parishes, you know, women who are single and just feel like, I've always wanted a child. I'm now 40-something. I don't think I'm going to get married. And I think that bringing to them what the beautiful alternatives are is what's so important. So when we come back, we have to actually head to a break. But when we come back, we're going to be talking more about these issues of what can be done for couples that face infertility and what's so bad about IVF anyway. As a woman experiencing infertility myself, I'll be able to add some personal perspectives. And we're talking with Father Tad Poholchik and Monsignor Robert Dempsey about this new document so badly needed in our society today, Dignitatis Personae. We welcome your questions and your comments. Give us a call, 312-255-8408. That's 312-255-8408. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
Cardinal George tells bishops from across the nation that our society must protect the right to life if the common good is to be served. We'll talk to the Cardinal about the fall meeting of U.S. bishops, and we'll shine a spotlight on Spanish ministry in the Archdiocese of Chicago as we highlight recent Hispanic Catholic services and events. Thanks for joining us for this latest edition of The Church, the Cardinal, and You.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You, compelling television about your archdiocese.
We're back here on Life Talk on Relevant Radio 950 AM. I'm Mary Louise Curry, and I'm talking with Father Tad Poholchik from the National Catholic Bioethics Center and Monsignor Dempsey, the former editor of the L'Osservatore Romano, priest of the Archdiocese of Chicago and a bioethicist. And before we went to the break, we were discussing artificial reproductive technologies. And this document, before we get into some specific technologies, this document talks about respecting three fundamental goods: the right to life, the unity of marriage, and the values, the human values of sexuality. That I think they call that the principle of inseparability, or something, but it's anyway where the procreative and the unitive aspects of the marital act cannot be separated. So then let's talk a little bit about the differentiation that is made between what is permissible for infertile couples and what is not permissible. Monsignor Dempsey, you want to take that first?
Well, they lay down two basic principles. One is that anything that is aimed at removing obstacles to natural fertilization, for instance,
hormonal treatments for infertility, surgery for endometriosis, unblocking of fallopian tubes through surgical repair, all of these sorts of things that assist a husband and wife in their ability to perform the conjugal act in the normal way and for it to achieve its natural effect. All of those things are good. Plus, they say in general, techniques that may be applied after the conjugal act has been performed in the normal way to assist in the uniting of a sperm and ovum are permissible too, although they don't go into much specific detail about that, and there is some debate as to what really is permissible or not.
Mm-hmm.
But the key principle is that you assist the husband and wife in being able to perform the act in the way God intended, and you do whatever you can to assist the act when it's performed in the proper way to achieve its desired effect.
Great. Now, Father Ted, in applying this, you know, it's interesting because I'm part of this Catholic Infertility Online Support Group. And actually, if anybody who is listening to this program out there is facing these issues, you can feel free to call me at the Respect Life office, and I can share information about a number of resources. The Respect Life office number is 312-534-5355. But Father Ted, what I found very interesting was that some of the women in the support group didn't seem to understand what was permissible or what wasn't permissible, even though to me it seemed very clear. But as Monsignor Dempsey said, there's maybe certain techniques where it's gray. Could you enlighten us a little bit? So what is, Monsignor Dempsey talked about what is permissible, certainly, but what is would be considered gravely immoral then as a treatment for infertility?
Any of those steps that would require you to replace the marital act with another kind of act altogether. In other words, transposing the creation of human life out of the setting of marital intimacy right into the laboratory where the parents no longer have the direct role in engendering their own children, but rather they in a sense become only donors of sex cells. Under those conditions where you are replacing the marital act with a completely separate and distinct kind of act, like you do in vitro fertilization, that kind of decision always represents an immoral decision.
Mm-hmm.
So anything along those lines that it no longer relies upon the marital act itself. The marital
yes.
act is seen as a privileged sanctuary where that gift is intended to be handed on.
That's terrific. We have a caller on the line, and I just want to put out there again for our listeners that we welcome your questions and your comments at 312-255-8408. We're talking with Father Ted Boholchik and Monsignor Robert Dempsey. Again, that's 312-255-8408. We have Mary from Chicago, who is a nurse, on the line with us. Mary, thanks so much for calling in.
You know, I think what we have to do with many succession of people is make us realize, and dimwit as we are after a while, we forget certain things about the oath, but remember so many other things.
Are you talking, Mary, about the Hippocratic Oath about medical professionals?
That's right. We forget about the promise. It's not a promise. It's an oath. And we have to know the difference between promises and oaths. Also about the Ten Commandments and coming back and refreshing people's minds as to our pilgrimage here on earth, and also concerning Pope John Paul II on theology of the body. I think he hit it right on the mark that we had better go back and refresh our minds and clear our heads out so that we realize that we are not here but on a pilgrimage for our own souls, those that we take care of, and our own family souls. Thank you.
Wonderful insight, Mary. Thank you so much for calling. Father Ted, your comments on that. I know that you work with a lot of medical professionals and even at times debate some who are involved in things like, you know, the more research end, like embryonic stem cell research. Is the medical community, in a sense, losing its way and needs a reminder of the Hippocratic Oath, God's plan for the entire gift of life, that this is a journey to heaven? What do you think about that? Do you think that's what do you think about what Mary shared?
Well, I think she's right on the mark in the sense that I think what has happened and what is continuing to happen with ever greater frequency in our society is that people feel it's possible to have a kind of professional life on the one hand, which is almost governed by its own set of ethics and moral values, and then they have another set which seems to apply mostly around Mass time on Sunday, and that they feel that the professional life and the professional ethics should not be in any way influenced by the kinds of teachings that the wisdom of the Church provides us with. And this is a real shame. This is a kind of bifurcation, a kind of separation that occurs inside a man himself as a professional that should not occur. We must be one man committed to Christ and to his teachings and seeking to apply them wherever he has put us in the world on the journey that Mary was referring to in that phone call. I think that we have to be more willing to stand up and be a witness sometimes in circumstances like medical settings where it may be difficult to provide that kind of witness. But
yes,
it is a very essential, very important kind of witness to be willing to provide.
Monsignor Dempsey, I know that you have a lot of physicians probably and other medical professionals in your parish. Thoughts?
Well, I have some. Probably more in the financial industry than the medical profession, but we certainly have some. But what Mary is saying about the nursing and medical profession, healthcare professions, is really true in a broader sense. You know, my primary responsibility is to be pastor of a parish, and that is what we try to do again and again and again, is to teach people how to live the gospel Monday through Saturday, not just on Sunday, in all the areas of their life, whether they're at the supermarket or at school or in their neighborhoods or in their professional life. But as Father Tad said, it is in professional life, particularly in our modern society, that bringing ethical principles, particularly those that are if not based on religion, at least fortified or enhanced or strengthened by religious commitments, bringing those to bear in what is meant to be a pluralist society, but unfortunately is becoming more and more a homogenized secular society in which any kinds of convictions that come out of one's religious background are excluded.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it's very easy to fall into that trap, and I'm not always sure that our Catholic professional schools, whether we're talking about business schools, law schools, or medical schools, are as good as they were maybe 40 or 50 years ago in teaching specific Catholic ethics with regard to professional ethics. I mean, all of those faculties used to have, they'd have to have required courses in medical ethics or legal ethics or whatnot.
Yes.
There were the great moral theologians of the mid-20th century, like Francis O'Connell, wrote textbooks on... and that, unfortunately, is not as strong as it should be. And bioethics has come, unfortunately, with regard to the healthcare industry as being I hate to sound cynical, but at times being nothing more than finding someone to rationalize what you decided to do already.
Right. That's what I find so fascinating. You know, we need to head to a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this, about integrity in bioethics, and also we're going to get into some of the specifics about IVF. I work with a lot of couples who are facing infertility. It's a personal experience of my own, but let's face it, 99% of the people who go into IVF have no clue what they're getting into. And we're going to be talking a little bit about some of those specific steps and the beautiful alternative of NAPRO technology. We welcome your questions, your comments at 312-255-8408. 312-255-8408. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Father Tad Poholchik and Monsignor Robert Dempsey here on Life Talk on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
We'll be right back. The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. Cardinal George says, "It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection. There are 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries willing to help you during times of loss. Call 708-449-6100 for assistance. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
Do you know what's going on in your church around the corner or around the world? Do you want to hear stories about your faith? Do you want to help shape Catholic thought? If you said yes, subscribe to the Catholic New World, the newspaper for the people of the Archdiocese of Chicago. Call 312-655-7777 or visit us at catholicnewworld.com. The Catholic New World, a world beyond your church, a church beyond your world.
We asked people all over America, what have you done for your marriage today?
It's a good question.
Boy, I gave a huge hug this morning, like a really big squeeze.
I took the baby while she worked.
I got up with the baby while he slept.
Yeah. We've actually organized a date night tonight.
I cooked my husband's favorite breakfast.
Well, I've done today what I usually do, and that is obey.
What have you done for your marriage today? Don't forget the small stuff. Need ideas? Go to foryourmarriage.org. A message from the Catholic Communication Campaign.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
We are back here on Life Talk. Welcome back, everyone. And we're heading into the second half of our program with Father Ted Boholczyk, the Director of Education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center, a Yale and Harvard-educated neuroscientist, and Monsignor Robert Dempsey, the editor of L'Osservatore Romano for 10 years, a priest of the Archdiocese of Chicago, and a bioethicist. And we're discussing Dignitatis Personae, the dignity of the person, which is the new document that was released by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith at the Vatican. And before we went to break, we were talking about bioethics and how in some hospitals, unfortunately, the bioethicist is sort of just like a somebody who's trying to rationalize some immoral research that the hospital may be engaged in. Father Ted, I remember in particular when you were coming to Chicago, we tried to set up a debate between you and a doctor at Northwestern who engages in embryonic stem cell research. I don't know if you remember that, and he refused to debate you.
I do remember that, yes.
And he wanted you instead to debate the ethicist, actually, but the students, the medical students, were very disappointed because they felt that she would not be as strong an opponent, and they thought it would be much better for you to debate the one actually killing the embryos, basically. And I think it is true that a lot of times bioethics, a lot of bioethicists maybe don't have a really solid moral compass, or situations of work influence their integrity.
And similarly, I think sometimes scientists have not done a lot of deep ethical thinking themselves, because what often happens is that the scientist is focused on the data and the science and the experiments. Mm-hmm. And so his interest is to maintain the flow of grant money, or to use other kinds of indicators of success to measure what he is doing. But very rarely does he have to engage in a full and kind of circumspect analysis of the moral implications of what he is involved in.
Yes.
So I think that's part of the reason that researcher at Northwestern was hesitant. He realized, perhaps, that his own reflection and ability to defend certain things that perhaps even he himself was involved in was not as extensive as he would anticipate that an ethicist might be. So
yes.
I've had this happen when I have debated scientists in other places, that this comes out, and you realize the only argument that they are able to marshal is an argument of efficiency, that, look, there might be some good that will come at the end of this road. If we just push ahead, slog ahead, and use these embryos, maybe somewhere down the road we will have some nice results from it. And that's the extent of the depth of the analysis that sometimes transpires. So, you know, it is a difficult thing to get both sides, the ethicists and the scientists, speaking to each other and using, you know, a properly informed kind of a language so that we don't end up violating the very goods that we putatively are pursuing in our science.
Yes. Now, as you know, President Bush put some limitations on federal funding for embryo-destructive research, and it is anticipated that President-elect Obama, when he takes office, will use an executive order to overturn that, basically placing no limits whatsoever on killing human embryos for research. Do you think, either Monsignor Dempsey or Father Ted, do you think, because there are currently at least 400,000 frozen embryos left over, so-called, these human beings from in vitro fertilization treatments, do you think that we will see a huge skyrocketing in basically the slaughter of innocent human life in this type of embryo-destructive research if those limitations are lifted?
I think that's a real possibility. For one purpose, one reason, is that so far embryonic stem cell research has produced nothing in the way of cures and real therapies for human beings. And yet there is this almost sort of blind faith that if we just keep doing it long enough and hard enough and extensively enough, eventually, sometime, possibly, we may actually come up with something. Well, that requires an endless supply of embryos to experiment on. So that the demand for more and more embryos will increase. On the other hand, given the state of our overall economy, the private sector isn't willing to invest a lot of money in procedures that don't seem to produce anything that's marketable in the future. That's why there's tremendous pressure put on governments to provide tax money, federal money, or state money, public monies, because the private sector isn't willing to bet on something that so far has proven to be a loser.
Mm-hmm.
So, if there's, the fundamental law is the more money that's available from the government, the more there's going to be a demand for it. So demand will always increase to meet the supply available. So, without any ethical restraints, the sky's the limit as far as I can see.
Yeah, and Mary Louise, I think that this can be approached in a couple of ways. I think it's at this moment still unclear exactly how the policy is going to be modified, because he could take one of two approaches. I mean, one approach would be really a very serious problem, which would be to say we will provide direct federal funding that can be used to destroy human embryos. And that would be the worst scenario possible. But what he could also do would be a kind of more measured approach here, something like what President Bush did, and say any new embryonic stem cell lines that have been created since President Bush's decision back in 2001, any new ones that have come forth since then will now be eligible to fall under the umbrella of federal funding and to be able to be used for research protocols. And that would be not so bad, in the sense that it would not be using federal money directly to promote the destruction of humans, but only would be working with the remains from previously destroyed human beings.
But don't you think, in a sense, that creates incentive then? Hey, you know what? If we kill these embryos now, it's likely that in four more years we'll get funding to use the lines.
Yes, I think it does. It certainly does. It, in a sense, makes people chomp at the bit quite a bit more. But I think it's clear, if you're asking from the point of view, you know, are there sort of different gradations
in
terms of the evil choices that could be made? There certainly are here. There are better and worse kinds of outcomes here. But both of them are definitely morally unacceptable in terms of being governmental policy.
Well, we need to head to another break already. It's hard to imagine this show is flying by. We're with Monsignor Robert Dempsey and Father Ted Boholczyk talking about dignitatis personae, the dignity of the person. Stay with us and give us a call, 312-255-8408. We'd love to hear from you with your question or comment. And we're going to be returning to issues of artificial reproductive technologies and helping, reaching out to those with the sadness of infertility. What can be done? And there are so many wonderful possibilities still open for them. 312-255-8408. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Chicago Bears executive Pat McCaskey attended a Catholic elementary school, high school, and university. He's glad he did.
The Bears have always emphasized community work, and I learned how to do that in the Catholic schools.
The Catholic schools of Cook and Lake Counties enjoy extremely high attendance and graduation rates, and they put students on a clear-cut path to college.
My wife and I have been blessed with three sons. We want our sons to continue to attend faith-based schools.
Pat McCaskey is backing a new Catholic schools initiative, Lessons That Last a Lifetime. Call 312-655-8486 for more information. That's 312-655-8486. Support Lessons That Last a Lifetime.
Good character and gospel values are just as important as good grades.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298 or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
Welcome back to Life Talk, and we're heading into our final stretch in this morning's show, talking with Father Ted Boholczyk and Monsignor Dempsey about the new instruction from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, Dignitatis Personae. And I just want to take a moment to thank Brian Brock, who is our technical engineer and who has been very frustrated with me for not taking breaks quite at the time he wants. So, Brian, thanks a lot. And also for Margie Mansko-Breen, who's behind the glass and fielding a lot of calls, but from a lot of shy people who don't want to be on the air asking a question. So this is kind of the last call for your phone calls, friends, at 312-255-8408. 312-255-8408. Now, before we went to the break, we were just talking about some harmful legislation that is likely to be forthcoming regarding the destruction of embryos, human lives, for research. And I just wanted to mention that the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is coordinating a major postcard campaign that the Archdiocese of Chicago will be participating in. And there's going to be a letter forthcoming from Cardinal George about that, seeking parish participation. So everyone should stay tuned for that. It's likely that will take place here in the Archdiocese sometime in early February. So please stay tuned for that. And, you know, that was how the Freedom of Choice Act was defeated in 1993. Millions of postcards deluged the Senate and the House of Representatives and made a huge impact in defeating the legislation. So we hope to get total involvement with that. And if you're interested, you can call the Respect Life office at 312-534-5355. So let's get back now, Father Chad, Monsignor Dempsey, let's get back to the sadness of infertility. You know, I Brian and I, my husband and I, have been married for almost 6 years, and we have not been blessed with children. I had an ectopic pregnancy, so we had one child, which unfortunately, who obviously passed away. But this is a huge sadness for couples. And a lot of times, before I was really informed, I couldn't really get a grasp of why the church was opposed to in vitro fertilization when it could give a couple the great gift of a child. But then when I learned about in vitro fertilization in terms of, first of all, what is actually done and the huge loss of life and the risks to the health of the woman, man, I felt so grateful for the wisdom of the church that it prevented Brian and me from going through the turmoil of, making really moral decisions that are horrific and couples should not be faced with. But Father Ted, maybe could you just begin by chatting about the impact on women's health? I know there's that group, Hands Off Our Ovaries, that is very concerned about the impact on women's health.
Yes, I think that the issue here is a relatively simple one, that in order to procure eggs that are required for in vitro fertilization, the woman's body is subjected to some rather strong superovulatory drugs. These are the drugs that make her ovaries pump out maybe a dozen, maybe 20, or even 30 eggs at a time, instead of the single egg that she typically releases with each month's cycle. And as you can imagine, to force her body to do this so that those eggs can then be harvested and used for in vitro fertilization, this puts an enormous stress on her physiology. And there, even now on the internet, women's groups, women who communicate through various online groups to share what they believe are some of the side effects from having been superovulated.
So, oh, wow.
This is one of the concerns that is raised. And
yes.
Just simply getting the starting cells. Similarly for the man, when you think about how he has to provide the sperm, you already have an immoral step that is typically part of this process.
Yes. Monsignor Dempsey, I know that couples I've talked with who've gone through IVF, many of them, first of all, in fact, for the majority, it's not successful. They don't have a living child at the end of this process. But there are couples who have told me they've, quote, gone through 13 embryos, 22 embryos. What do you think? I mean, do you think couples, first of all, how does that work? And do you think couples really know that going into it?
You know, I think when they go into it, although many of those things may be technically explained to them in technical language, at the time they come to a fertility clinic, they are so desperate, at least so desirous, that they're really not paying full attention. The people I've talked to, you know, afterwards, if they are successful, they still have this question of all of these frozen embryos that are left over.
Yes.
And particularly, I'm not sure about men as much as the mother, who realizes this little baby she's holding was once an embryo. Now she has a dozen or more frozen embryos who are potentially just like this little child that she's holding in her arms.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't want a dozen children. And now she's got this ethical dilemma as to what to do. And there really is no clear ethical solution to
Yes.
what she is to do. And yet those kinds of implications, you're going to bring into existence all of these little human beings, and they're yours in a very, very real sense. And what are you going to do about that?
Yeah,
and if there's no clear answer, you have to live with that for the rest of your life. And
yes.
I don't think that's clear to people at all when they first sit down in that lovely doctor's office and start talking about what can you do to help us have a baby.
Absolutely. We have a call from Robert. Robert from Chicago, you're live on Relevant Radio. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks. taking my call. I'm glad I got through. I listen to you time to time, and I have to make this short because I'm running into an interview, so wish me luck with that.
Oh, good luck. Blessings.
The question was triggered by the two words, human dignity. I just got through reading Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, and that was he's a PhD, I'm not sure, but his book was about Lola. He was a survivor of Auschwitz. He had a great story to tell, and one of the questions that I was left unanswered to seek out an answer for was this concept of dignity. Is it innate? Is it learned? And do you have any references that you'd recommend that I can explore this idea a little bit more?
Excellent question. Thank you, Robert. Father Ted and Monsignor Dempsey, we just have a few minutes left in the show, but any thoughts on Robert's profound question?
Well, I think certainly spending time with some of the church documents and to see how they reference dignity, human dignity, and certainly recognizing that to talk about human dignity on the one hand, but on the other hand, to make some kind of an argument that human life itself could be expendable, that those are, in a sense, incompatible realities. And so when you begin at least with that foundational understanding of what we mean by human dignity, that there is implied an equality among all who are members of the human family, there is a dignity that demands that we not use a kind of double standard and create subclasses within the family. That has always been, I think, at the center of the church's thinking on human dignity. So, but I think that, you know, you pick it up not in sort of an explicit delineation necessarily within the documents, but as you read the documents, that's one dimension of a correct understanding of what human dignity is.
Monsignor Dempsey?
Well, if from a religious standpoint, you know, you begin very with the first two chapters of Genesis. You know, God made them in his own image, and in the image of God they were made. Male and female, he made them in his own image and likeness. For the believer, that's the fundamental principle, that each human being is made in the image and likeness of God. Then the examples in the gospel, particularly our Lord's parable of the lost sheep, you know, the shepherd who leaves 99 sheep to go after the lost one because every one individual is precious to him. Even the hairs on your head are numbered, and a sparrow doesn't die without your Heavenly Father noticing it. You're infinitely more valuable than a flock of sparrows.
Yes.
The scriptures, you know, the dignity of each and every human being is so clear. I think those are points of meditation that one can begin with.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's hard to imagine, but we are almost out of time for the program. I just want to point any listeners out there who are experiencing infertility to check out a couple of websites, fertilitycare.org or naprotechnology.com, because these are wonderful sources of the groundbreaking natural procreative technology, which has been 80% successful in couples who wish to have children. Who've been experiencing infertility and is totally aligned with our faith. All of the treatments are not only moral, but actually good for the women's health. So I encourage you to check out naprotechnology.com or fertilitycare.org.
It's a triple, it's a grand slam, really, because it's more successful, it costs less, and it has no ethical qualms or raises any ethical questions.
That's right. And for more questions on that, you can call the Respect Life office at 312-534-5355, and we can talk with you about that. Monsignor Dempsey, Father Ted Boholczyk, thank you so much for being with us as we talked about Dignitatis Personae this morning.
Thank you, Mary Louise.
It's a blessing to have both of you with us. And friends, we appreciate your being with us on the show today. And again, feel free to log on to respectlifechicago.org for additional information or to reach us. We hope that you have a blessed month, and we'll be back on the first Wednesday of February to talk again about issues that make a difference in your life. And we are with Monsignor Robert Dempsey and Father Ted Boholczyk today to discuss the document Dignitatis Personae, infertility and ethical treatments. Stay with us, and we'll be back next month. So God bless you.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day, and God bless you.